Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. I am Hub Arkush, the executive editor and general manager at Pro Football Weekly. I am joined, as I am each week, by our managing editor, Arthur Arkush. And Arthur, a little news for our podcast followers. We've made some executive decisions around Pro Football Weekly. And beginning this week, we're going to go from two separate podcasts, Pro Football Weekly NFL and Pro Football Weekly Chicago, to just our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, but we are going to extend a little bit, go about 35-40 minutes, and have a 5 or 10 minute NFL Way We Hear It segment at the end to make sure we cover everything, not only for Bears fans, but all NFC North, all NFL fans here at Pro Football Weekly Chicago. This week, obviously, a very busy and news-filled week around the Chicago Bears, so we start with that, and I think we've got to start with a quick conversation about the, I find sad and disappointing news that Kyle Long, for the fourth year in a row, has landed on the injured reserve list. The last 3 years, he made it to basically midseason, couldn't even get there this year. And I think there's a couple troubling things about this, Arthur, but the most important one, we know that he redid the contract coming into this season to give the Bears some salary cap flexibility. He has said he wants to be a Bear for life, but now all he has left is an option year next year. And after a fourth straight year not being able to go more than half a season, at least at the salary that that option is at, it's unlikely that the Bears would pick that up. It is quite possible that Kyle Long's season is not over, but also that his storied Bears career could be coming to an end.
Yeah, you've summed it up well. It really is unfortunate. 7 years, you know, everyone knows that it started out a lot more promisingly than it ended, and the injuries caught up to him, but it's easy to forget. It shouldn't be forgotten, as easy as it might be, some of the sacrifices he has made. You mentioned, let's call it what it is, he took a pay cut in order to ensure his return for a seventh season. Remember, he was coming on as arguably the best guard in football when he took another one for the team and moved out to right tackle, pretty much on the eve of the regular season in 2015, because his good buddy Jordan Mills just wasn't getting the job done. And Long, unfortunately, I mean, he went to a Pro Bowl that year. No, he wasn't as great at right tackle as he was at right guard. And unfortunately, there was just a precipitous drop off, largely due to injuries after that. So a team guy, a well-respected person in the locker room, and someone who really just had a marvelous start to his career as a first rounder who was, if he wasn't overdrafted, remember, he came in with not a lot of experience and just immediately showed what a unique athletic freak he was. And I know we both really enjoyed covering him. And it just stinks that now he has to kind of be, he shouldn't be, but he's become, unfortunately, sort of the poster boy for this struggling offensive line. And that shouldn't be the case either. Matt Nagy was very clear to point out this isn't on one guy, and replacing Kyle Long is not going to be an easy task.
Yeah, let me be as clear and adamant about this as I can. And I am not taking shots at Charles Leno, because I like Charles Leno, and he's a great young man. But through the first 5 games, go watch the tape, folks. Charles Leno has been a bigger problem than Kyle Long. Neither has played well. The other 3 guys have had their moments, too. The Bears' problems on the offensive line are with the offensive line. They're right, not just with Kyle Long. But there is another aspect of this story that it is our job to at least discuss. And Arthur, you know nobody hates conspiracy theories more than I do. This is not that. This is reporting possibilities. It's not news because I don't know the facts. But nobody's really talked about the reality that Kyle told us all summer he hasn't felt this good in 3 years. Coming into the season, he was ready for a huge comeback performance. He was struggling on the field. There's no question about that. It may have been because of some physical limitations as a result of all the other injuries and all the other surgeries. But the hip injury that sidelined him for week 4 versus the Vikings came out of nowhere. He wasn't even on the injury list at the beginning of the week. He went to the injury list. He ended up missing the game. Then he comes back and plays in London. And then he comes back from London with such a bad injury that he has to be sidelined for the year. It is conceivable that this was organizational discussions about Kyle just not playing well enough and finding a soft spot for him to land and putting him on IR as opposed to possibly having to bench him or release him. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened, but when you look at the accumulation of all the facts here, to me, it is every bit as possible as the reality that he does have a new serious hip injury that we really don't know much more about.
Yeah, it's a great point, and it should be noted that Kyle Vaughn played every snap in London, so it's not like he needed to be removed from that game because the hip issue, the alleged hip issue, had become so hard to overcome. And Matt Nagy did allude earlier this week to the fact that this is a wear and tear thing too, kind of saying maybe it's a culmination of injuries and not just this mysterious hip issue that first popped up in the week four practice, apparently. We should also mention Kyle Long's legacy is a little bit complicated because as fiery of a guy as he is and as good of a football player at his best as he is, his competitiveness and his fieriness have led to a few, I think, regrettable decisions on the practice field with a couple of his teammates. One of them, very high profile, well documented, this summer in, again, Kyle Long's best summer in years, practicing every day. So not suggesting that that's what this is about either, but it probably does bear mentioning that it wasn't always perfect for Kyle Long, even inside Hallis Hall.
Yeah, and again, we certainly hope, number one, the best for Kyle, because he is an outstanding young man. We hope to see him in Navy and Orange again. No, nobody has ruled that out. It's just that, you know, if you've been doing this for a while, you know how these things go, and we have to be realistic about the track that this story has taken. I do want to add, I have a source who is very close to Kyle's dad, to Howie Long, and I have been hearing about the hip injury. I can't remember if it's for 3 or 4 weeks now. So there is an injury.
Right.
There's either wear and tear or there's an injury. But whether it was actually a season-ending injury, you know, two guys went on IR this week. One went on designated to return. The other one was sat down for the year. Each team, I believe, is entitled to two designated for return IR exemptions right now, and one was not given to Kyle Long. So that's kind of the reality.
After he got one last year,
right,
and was able to make the comeback from the ankle injury in week 17, and that's what's bittersweet about this, Hub. Remember, he makes his playoff debut in only the second game back, and I think had a fairly positive effect, so that's worth noting.
Well, I was going to say, if you go back and watch the tape of the Eagles game, because I did a couple weeks ago, he played pretty well.
Right.
And so that's what makes all of this so hard to digest and to get our arms around. At some point, and understandably, nobody has talked to or heard from Kyle in the last few days since the decision was made. Again, that's completely understandable. At some point, we will get to talk to Kyle. We'll get some more background and some more information. We'll have it for you here on our podcast when we do. But right now, just very unfortunate. Now, we're going to talk about the impact of that, but I think first we might as well clean up the injury business, because the other loss, which is every bit as big, I take that back. I don't personally think it is as big, because the defensive line prior to that mess against the Raiders has been outstanding, one of the best groups in the league, and they're not struggling as much as the offensive line is. So while Akeem Hicks, who I consider an all-pro, he was a Pro Bowler, he was second team all-pro last year, I guess that does make him an all-pro, who is designated possibly to return as soon as week 15. I don't see that happening based on the injury that he suffered, but it is another very significant loss. Fortunately for the Bears, they do have some additional star power in guys like Eddie Goldman and Roy Robertson Harris, and we think Bilal Nichols, who was pointed in that direction till he broke his hand, and we do expect Nichols to be back on the field Sunday against the Saints. So it is another significant loss. It is interesting in terms of Matt Nagy's philosophy on injuries and trying to protect against him and the exhibition season stuff and all that. You know, we've got so much to talk about this week. We don't need to go there this week.
Right.
But short of that, in terms of its impact on the defense and the defensive line, I think it's fair to say that they are better suited to withstand the loss of Akeem Hicks than the offensive line necessary is to withstand the loss of Kyle Long.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with that, only because I think the drop-off is greater from Akeem Hicks to a Nick Williams or to a Jonathan Anderson or an Abdul Anderson, excuse me, or a Jonathan Harris, than it's going to be ultimately from Kyle Long to either Rashad Coward or Ted Larson. Now, with all that being said, obviously the Bears have drafted and spent behind this D-line, and now more than ever they need Roquan Smith and Khalil Mack to be taking over games and helping kind of mitigate the loss of Akeem Hicks. But this Bears defense has never had to overcome this before. Hicks missed his first first game ever in week four as a Bear. They were able to overcome it in that game, obviously played brilliant against the Vikings, but his absence was felt a lot more largely in Oakland. So we'll see what happens next, but this Bears defense needs to learn how to play knowing that Akeem Hicks isn't coming to rescue them, at least not for the next couple months. So I think it's probably semantics here, but I just think the level of play of these two, currently of these two guys, the loss of Akeem is a little bit greater in my opinion.
And I don't know that it's a point worth debating, Arthur, because it's going to be proven on the field, but the reason we're not going to agree for the moment is, in fact, in the Minnesota game, there was no drop-off from Akeem Hicks to Nick Williams. Nick Williams was outstanding. I'm not pretending he's as good a player as Akeem Hicks, but I think some of that is because there is so much talent around that position.
Right.
There's no question that the drop-off to Jonathan Harris and Abdullah Anderson was felt tremendously, but you also have to remember there was an impact of getting Hicks back, feeling good about it, and then six plays into the game in a foreign country, seeing him going to the locker room.
Sure.
So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. The one thing that we obviously are completely agreeing on is that when you lose an All-Pro, you know, it's going to hurt. It's going to sting. And the loss of Akeem Hicks is certainly huge. Now, there is some good news in that's where the injury conversation will stop for now. The other players who have missed time the last few weeks, Ted Larson, Mitch Trubisky, Taylor Gabriel, Bilal Nichols, all returning to full practice activities this week preparing for the Saints. So with a team that had pretty much no injury list to worry about for the first year and a quarter under Matt Nagy, suddenly was without five and six starters for their last two games, it does appear, at least as we record at the end of the week, that it could be all hands on deck for the Saints, with the exceptions of Long and Hicks, who are now no longer on the roster.
Yeah, those two transactions, Hub, and obviously Long and Hicks going to IR were jarring, of course, because of what they mean to this franchise, but they shouldn't obscure the fact that overall the trajectory from a health standpoint seems to be kind of pointing upward, and now the question becomes, can Mitch Trubisky and can Taylor Gabriel somehow find a way to pick up where they left off before they were injured? Because remember, Mitch played his best game in Washington, threw three touchdowns. No, it wasn't perfect. He was rough early on in that one, but clearly markedly improved over what we had seen in the previous 2 weeks, and that was the best game of Taylor Gabriel's career, obviously, on the receiving end of all three of those scores, and it looked like maybe Matt Nagy finding out how to use these guys a little bit better, too. Remember, he had inserted the tempo for the first time. It seemed like maybe he was moving the pocket a little bit more for Mitch for the first time in a while, so that's what I'm anxious to see. And then, of course, it was Bilal Nichols. He told us, Bears Insider, he wanted to be a Pro Bowler this year. That was his expectation. He's never had to play with a cast on his hand. That has got to be a really tough task for a defensive lineman, but I am anxious to see how someone with the explosiveness, with the instincts of Bilal Nichols, can try and use those qualities to overcome the vital nature of any D lineman needing his hands to be at his best.
Yeah, Arthur, we will get to Trubisky. We got to take a break in a couple minutes, so we'll talk about quarterback and a little more about the running game and the offense in a few minutes. But before we do break, we should get back to specifically the loss of Kyle Long, because we know with Akeem Hicks, Nick Williams needs to step up. Jonathan Harris and Abdullah Anderson in their moments have to be a factor when they're on the field. I'm sure that the Bears are looking at the waiver wire, and even possibly, you know, the trade deadline is October 29th. If they feel that Anderson and Harris can't do it, they can go out and get some help. But we don't know, as of really going into the weekend, who is going to be starting in Kyle Long's spot. We know that there are three possibilities. Everybody tends to assume Ted Larson. I don't think that's going to be the case. Number one, Larson is back and practicing, but he has had some knee problems. And Larson is a guy who can play both left and right guard or center. He is extremely valuable for his versatility on the interior of the offensive line. If he becomes your starting right guard, you lose all that because you don't have anybody else who can do all those things. Rashad Coward basically has been an offensive lineman for a year and a half. He was a defensive lineman for 20 years, or however long he played football, certainly through his college career at Old Dominion when he came to the Bears, and in that year and a half until a couple of weeks ago was spending all his time at right tackle. They had talked about, the Bears, I should say, had talked about his versatility, and they thought that he might be able to play inside, but never really did it until he was forced there on an emergency basis in the game in London. So now you turn around and you look at Alex Bars, who was just activated off the practice squad. I was really surprised he didn't make the team coming out of training camp, because I thought he was one of the best guards on the team at the time. He is the undrafted rookie free agent out of Notre Dame. We can say with some certainty he won't be starting this Sunday. I'm not at all certain he won't be starting before the year is out, but he won't be starting this Sunday. It looks like Rashad Coward is going to be next man up, and the Bears are going to start by seeing exactly what he gives them at that right guard position.
Right. So we should point out that we only chatted with Rashad on Wednesday before practice, and he had earned the first team reps. It was also Ted Larson's first practice back since suffering the knee injury in week four versus Minnesota that elevated Coward onto the field after he had been working at right tackle during the week. So I think that part should be noted, but I'm pretty sure, Hub, that we're both on the same page. If the Bears are looking for upside in this decision, they're going to go with Rashad Coward. If they're looking for comfort and experience and maybe consistency right out of the gate, they may opt for Ted Larson. I think that the type of jolt that this offensive line needs right now, and I think that kind of the best opportunity to replace at least what Kyle Long was at his best, which is just a physically imposing freak, well, that's Rashad Coward that you're talking about. And watching the way that he moved guys a little bit, watching the way that he moved to the second level right after entering that game versus the Vikings, it seems like he might be the best option right now. But again, we're both kind of speculating, and we're just got to wait and see what happens Sunday.
All right, we'll take a quick break here and pick up the conversation on the other side.
For more than 70 years, Gracers Plumbing and Heating has served the Illinois Valley customers as a trusted source for appliances and the purchase of energy-efficient products at affordable prices. Call Gracers Plumbing and Heating at 815-882-2111. We've been voted number one in the Reader's Choice for the Ottawa Times, LaSalle News Tribune, and Princeton BCR. Call Gracers Plumbing and Heating at 815-882-2111. We also want to thank all of our other great sponsors here at our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much to our friends at Gracer Heating and Plumbing for being our title sponsor of our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. We want to thank all of our other great sponsors as well. You probably feel like you know them at this point. Our executive producer, Dan Mott, we talk about him every week a few times because he does such a remarkable job for us with these podcasts and everything audio and video at Pro Football Weekly and at Pro Football Weekly Chicago, Chicago Football. And we want to thank our buddies at Humphreys McGee, I should say, Arthur's buddies, great Chicago band, bunch of domers. I'll forgive them for that. They all went to Notre Dame, I believe. I'm a Michigan guy, so you probably get the reference. But they play great music, and they're good enough to let us use that music for our sound beds in this show. We thank them as well. Please be sure and go to their website and check out your next chance to catch them around Chicago. You won't be sorry. Arthur, one of the more interesting things for me during this bye week has been a visit that we had with Mitch Trubisky on Wednesday. And it was interesting because we knew that he had been limited in participation in practice on Monday. There was no practice on Tuesday. Now, part of the routine you get into in season as the starting quarterback of every team has a session with the media, a press conference each week. It's on Wednesdays in Chicago. And before there was any certainty whether Mitch would actually start Sunday against the Saints or not, it was Chase Daniel who got the press conference leading into the game in London because he was the starter. The Bears announced that Trubisky would be at the podium. Now, some of that may have been just because he obviously is one of the most important guys with the franchise, and none of the media had a chance to talk to him at all since the injury, but it became clearer as the week went on. And again, as we record, nothing is official, but it certainly seemed likely that Mitch was going to be back under center versus the Saints. And what was interesting about the visit with him, I know we both noticed it. I don't know how much of the Chicago media will agree with us. It was a little bit of a different Mitch Trubisky that we got this week than what we've seen the first couple of years here in Chicago.
Well, he seemed to be talking and thinking for himself more than just kind of parroting whatever Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace have been telling us since July. And he seemed more comfortable. Things seemed more natural. And whether that translates to the field obviously remains to be seen. But I find it to be almost ironic some of the things that he had taken heat for in front of, you know, up at the podium are sort of relatable to some of the issues he's had on the field, where in certain spots he kind of maybe seems to panic a little bit. We saw that a few weeks ago when he was asked to kind of rehash, I believe it was the Packers game, and, you know, leaned on the PR and took the opportunity to say, well, I've been told not to talk about last week. It was a bad look at the time. There was something comparable. And Hub did a great job writing on this Wednesday night. You should check out his column at ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. We know you guys get there regularly as it is. But there was another opportunity where he was asked about the specifics of his dislocated left shoulder and whether it had to be popped back in by medical personnel on the sideline. And he kind of hesitated for a moment and looked over at PR. And maybe we thought for a second, oh gosh, here we go again. But it was really natural. And he didn't come off looking bad. Instead, everyone was able to have a good laugh about it. As he said, oh no, it kind of went back in on its own, and then kind of detailed a little bit how uncomfortable of a feeling that is and got another laugh. So again, it could be much ado about nothing, or it could be that time away has allowed Mitch to get a slightly different perspective. Remember, he's been absolutely in the crosshairs, and the pitchforks, the guys wielding them, have been out for Mitch. So we'll see what differences there may be now.
What was interesting about that moment is that he looked, he hesitated, and then he laughed. And it's not like we've never seen him laugh before, but it was real clear he wasn't looking for what to be told. He was laughing because he didn't know what to say, you know, and he handled it really well. And then there was another moment a couple minutes later, and it was actually, I asked him the question. To me, it is the only question that matters at the moment if he's going to play, because, you know, Matt Nagy has said a couple times it's really a question of pain tolerance.
Yeah.
And so I said, Mitch, you know, Matt has told us that if you go, it's a question of your pain tolerance. And so I think, you know, what probably is pivotal here is, does it hurt every time you throw the ball, even though it's your non-throwing shoulder, because of the motion of your upper body? Or is it only contact that you're worried about? And he hesitated for a minute, and he said, that's a really good question. And it was clear to me, and I think everybody in the room, he wasn't thinking about what he'd been told by somebody else to say. He was trying to figure out the right way to answer the question. And he gave an answer that was, you know, well thought out, and talked about, you know, contact being the concern, and obviously hasn't had any contact in practice, and wrapped it up. And he hadn't really asked the question, so I went with the follow-up. I said, but Mitch, specifically, does your non-throwing shoulder hurt with your throwing motion of your right arm? And he hesitated again. And he said, you know, I haven't had enough practice yet, but I've been throwing the ball. He said, I don't want anybody to know how much I'm throwing the ball. He said, but no, it feels pretty good right now. He handled it like a bright young guy answering a question, not like something he had been scripted to handle. And that has been the biggest concern about Mitch Trubisky, is how scripted he is, how tightly he's being managed, how he's being pigeonholed as a game manager. Listen, we don't know that the Bears have changed anything with Mitch and how they're handling him, but he clearly came across differently after having a few weeks off. And at the end, what struck me was he was pretty confident in himself in front of the group. He wasn't worried about what anybody was going to say or anybody was going to think. And it's that confidence that people keep harping on. I don't even know if it's ever been an issue, but to me, he was a very confident young man at the podium on Wednesday.
Yeah, it struck both of us, and we'll see. I might be making more of this than it is, but I do think it's interesting some of the dicey moments he's had at the podium kind of translate to some of the dicey moments he's had on the field. And if his diagnostic skills have improved at the podium, who knows? Maybe they'll improve on the field too, or who knows? This could be the same Mitch Trubisky football player come Sunday. Hub, we should probably stay on that for 1 minute, though. Can he be the same Mitch Trubisky? Because one thing that's been missing from his game that we saw last year was the let it, you know, the freewheeling, the improvisational skills outside the pocket. It's hurt the offense, them not being there, but I don't know how realistic it is to expect that to return right out of the gate with the injury, when he's still, it's natural that's going to be in the back of his mind no matter how well he's playing.
Well, there's a couple problems here, and I'm going to pick a bone with the Bears, not with Mitch Trubisky, but it's part of the answer, okay? Matt Nagy has been an absolute breath of fresh air and delight to deal with for the media, and I suspect for fans after 3 years of John Fox. It's like night and day. He's engaging, he's conversational, and he will tell us stuff sometimes when it comes to football and analyzing tape and what he's seeing in his players. But while he claims to be very forthcoming with the injury information, the reality is they're not nearly as forthcoming as most teams in the league. They will never give us specifics. They never actually identify what these injuries are. The only thing we've been told about Akeem Hicks' injury is that it's an elbow injury. Mm-hmm. They haven't confirmed what everybody saw on the field, that it was obviously dislocated. The only thing that we know about Mitch's shoulder injury is what Adam Schefter reported a couple days after.
Yep.
You know, they don't dispute that it's a shoulder. Schefter reported that it was both a dislocated shoulder and a slight tear of the labrum. We don't know if that's true or not, okay? And so we do know if it was the throwing shoulder, he wouldn't be playing regardless, okay?
Right.
But because it's the non-throwing shoulder, they're considering it.
And we do know that Schefter bats as close to 1,000 on these stories
the
as anyone.
Right? Adam is the best at what he does,
right.
And I brag about it because he got his start at Pro Football Weekly.
Right.
But my point would be, you know, when you talk about can he be the same going back on the field, without knowing the specifics of the injury, we have to assume that they have to protect that shoulder, even though it's his non-throwing shoulder.
Mitch has said he'll be wearing a harness.
Yeah.
He confirmed that.
And so what's the natural next step of that? You probably don't want him running around in the open field where he's going to be exposed to more shots.
Yep.
Well, if you take away that part of his game, you're taking away some of what he does best. And Matt Nagy did admit that much.
Yep.
And he said, no, if we put him out there, he's not limited at all. That's obviously not true. And I'm not calling Matt dishonest or saying he's lying to us. He's being a coach. He's saying what he has to say. He doesn't want to give away the game plan to the New Orleans Saints. But you have to know if Trubisky is out there Sunday, he's not fully healed. They don't want him taking any more shots on that shoulder than he has to. And just that knowledge by itself is likely to limit his effectiveness a little bit. It can't be out of his head at any time. He's aware of it. I'm not saying he's going to be thinking about it, but to expect him to be at 100% capacity, when quite simply you know he's not because he is still playing hurt, is probably not realistic.
Right. And now let's also point out that a limited physical Mitch Trubisky is still light years ahead of Chase Daniel. Guys, I went to Mizzou. I love Chase to death. Everything he did for the program, I have a lot of respect for what he's done as a 10-year career backup in the NFL. But he's limited physically. I mean, from a size standpoint, from an athleticism standpoint. So even if Trubisky is, say 75% of himself in that regard, I think he'd probably still prefer having that to Chase. But it doesn't really get to the point I was at the top. Mitch wasn't running prior to getting hurt. I think he's got 5 carries on the season. At this point last year, he had triple that and had already shown himself as a weapon in that regard. So while it may not be an issue for Sunday, it's something that we need to keep tabs on because Matt could not have been more clear about that yesterday. He said he's doing everyone a disservice, and I'm paraphrasing, if he's taking that element of Mitch's game away.
Well, and Arthur, actually, it is a big factor in Sunday and everything because the natural extension of that is maybe the reason he hasn't improved as much as we would like and developed more quickly and been as effective in the offense is because he hasn't been running as much as he was, you know?
Right.
And so now he's not likely to do more of it.
Right.
And so,
but let's get to the root of that. Do you think that that's a natural? Because Nagy was asked about this yesterday too. He said Nagy was asked if defenses are taking that away or if that's more a happenstance thing. And he pointed to Alex Smith a couple years ago in Kansas City. I believe it was his career year, or maybe the year before, when he was awesome as a runner, and then that element almost disappeared the next season. Do you think it all is random? Because we can't forget that Mitch was injured the first time and missed 2 games at the end of a scramble, coincidentally also against the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know. Do you think that maybe that's it all in his head, or if that's just the opportunities haven't been there and it's something that could reverse course here later this year?
Arthur, I know people want to have that debate, but my answer is if we trust our ears, we know that's not true because Tremont Williams told us week one, the Packers' game plan was keep Mitch in the pocket mm-hmm. and try and make him beat you through the air. The morons doing the TV broadcast from London claimed that every Raider they talked to said that their game plan, because I don't believe that every Raider they talked to said this, but apparently there were some Raiders who also voiced part of our game plan is keep Mitch in the pocket.
Yep.
So it is definitely something that teams are trying. And I don't I'm not faulting Matt Nagy for this. He's not going to say, you know, he shouldn't say, you know, what their game plan right. is and what they're trying to do. He shouldn't give that away. But this is where our jobs as analysts is just to report the facts. And the facts are clearly it is something that teams have tried to take away. Now, point, counterpoint. Football is a chess match. Matt Nagy knows that. The natural reaction is, okay, so now if I want to make Mitch more effective and loosen things up for him, I've got to put some things in to get him out of the pocket, make some plays down the field with his legs, and that'll open it up. That now is most likely not part of this Sunday's game plan because you've got to try and protect that shoulder as much as you can.
And now another counterpoint to that is that the New Orleans Saints pressure quarterbacks at a higher rate, or I believe it's the second highest rate. NFL Network said at Halas yesterday it was the number one rate without blitzing, just with their front four. So if you can't put that in your game plan, then boy, you're asking a lot of this offensive line that has struggled and now is going to have a new starter to make sure you're keeping Mitch safe back there. And I think we're going to get to the same thing here, Hub. One way to counter even that, well, that would be to finally unleash a running game that can be effective, and if not, a screen game that can slow that pass rush and make sure Mitch is as comfortable as he possibly can be.
Yeah, the problem is that as much as you want to rely on the screen game, when you're not making plays down the field and when you're not running the ball, the screens become a lot less effective. What does set everything up is the running game, and it's got to happen at some point. And this gets back to the question we've had for a year and a half, and we don't have answers to it yet. How much of it is the offensive line? How much of it is the running backs? How much of it is the scheme and the play calling? And until, you know, you have at least a little bit of success and you can see what is working, you don't know which one of those things is the biggest issue. So, listen, you know, when you think about the New Orleans Saints coming to town, all you think about is Drew Brees, and then you think about the offense. Offense is still dangerous. Now, there is late-breaking news we don't have for you. Alvin Kamara suffered a high ankle. We're told it was a high ankle sprain last Sunday in that game. It was the Bucs, I think, wasn't it?
They beat the Jaguars.
The Jaguars, last week. The Bucs were the week before.
We weren't technically told it. I think NFL Network reported it on Wednesday as a high ankle variety is the injury.
If, in fact, he had a high ankle sprain, he's not going Sunday.
Yeah.
And if Alvin Kamara doesn't go, then all bets are off. But you have to realize what's been covered up by the Saints offense and Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara is the Saints defense is not that far behind the Bears. It is one of the best defenses in the NFL right now, something we're not used to. It took Dennis Allen almost 2 years to get it there, but it's there now. And so this thing becomes a slugfest. Suddenly the Bears' chances become, and by the way, as good a job as Teddy Bridgewater is doing at 4-0, Teddy Bridgewater is not a clear choice over Mitch Trubisky, you know, based on their careers to this point. Bridgewater's one-loss record is outstanding, but the games that he's won with his arm, you can count on one hand and maybe just a couple fingers. So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. Clearly, the run game is critical. The Bears are going to have to get it going. We're going to have a lot more for you on that in the coming weeks, but we're almost out of time here. And, Arthur, we do want to touch on a couple of big stories, and they do impact the Bears. They're now into that murderer's row portion of the schedule that we talked about. It is the Saints this week, the Chargers coming to town next week, a trip to Philadelphia, then the Lions coming to town, and then a trip to the Rams. Well, the Philadelphia Eagles have been up and down, not as good as the Bears. They're at 3-3. They're having huge problems on defense. They go to Dallas, who the Bears will also see later in the season. Cowboys, a huge disappointment. Their only wins are over awful teams. You know, I think it's 5-18 is the combined one-loss record of the three teams they've beat. Now, they did lose a couple tough ones. I mean, they played New Orleans very tough on the road. Green Bay's 5-1. But then losing to the Jets last week, the NFC East is a mess. And suddenly Dallas and Philadelphia don't look that scary. But the winner of that one this weekend in Dallas becomes that much scarier for the Bears. And it feels to me like it could be Philadelphia, who the Bears are going to see in a few weeks.
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts here. The schedule, obviously, it's never what it first appears, and that's the case again, even with the Chargers, who come to town in 2 weeks. More breaking news as we're taping here. Russell Okung, their left tackle, it sounds like is going to be back, if not this week, by next Sunday. That's huge against Leonard Floyd and Khalil Mack, to say the least. So, you know, opportunity is knocking for the Bears, and we'll see what they do with it. Even, you know, even the Giants look better. So you never know what the schedule. I mean, with Daniel Jones behind center, they've gotten a little bit of a spark. They'll be here later in the season too. But at the end of the day, it's about the Bears taking care of their own business. And, you know, obviously that's going to start Sunday with the Saints and a shorthanded Saints team. But as far as, you know, you had teed up the Eagles, they're going to play without Jason Peters in Dallas Sunday. Dallas could still be without both of its starting tackles. They've got Jason Garrett now in the crosshairs. So a lot of flux across the NFC East. There's no question about that.
The other one we've got to just touch on, the Los Angeles Rams went nuts this week. You know, they trade Marcus Peters for Kenny Young, a promising young linebacker, but certainly not a player at this stage of his career anywhere near the caliber of Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters, going all the way back to being dismissed from the team in college, has got his issues, his character issues, and yet here's a Rams team that has been struggling mightily on defense, and they send Aqib Talib to the injured reserve list and trade Marcus Peters within a couple hours of each other, and then turn around and give up two number one picks and a four, I believe, a conditional four, maybe it was, to get Jalen Ramsey from the Jaguars. It doesn't come with a contract extension. Ramsey's contract is up next year. The Rams do have some cap issues going into this deal, and so just a real wild week. And the punchline on it is a lot of people, as much as I don't think anybody in Chicago disputes the wisdom or the value of the Khalil Mack trade at this point, some still upset that the Bears gave up two first-round picks. The Rams have not had a first-round pick since 2016. That was the price of Jared Goff. They will not have a first-round pick until 2022. Jalen Ramsey is a really good football player, but he comes with almost as many attitude and character questions as Marcus Peters. You don't know if you're going to be able to re-sign him after next year, and they paid a huge price. Is it enough for the Rams to get their 3-3 start turned?
Boy, I don't know. In the NFC West, where the Niners are undefeated and the Seahawks are at 5-1 and the Rams are sitting there at 3-3, Hub, this one's a head-scratcher for me, and again, not because of Jalen Ramsey's football acumen. It is at the top of the league at his position, and I even think from a mental standpoint, from a locker room standpoint, if he gets paid, I think he'll be fine, but that's the ultimate rub here. I can't crunch the numbers in any way to where I find out how this can work for the Rams, and if their plan was to, you know, have him this year, then tag him, fifth-year option next year, tag him after that, then I'm not sure they don't get the same disgruntled Jalen Ramsey who has phantom back injuries and becomes an issue. I think the locker room, I think Sean McVay are the type of sort of locker room to handle it, but you can only handle so much. So I really am scratching my head about this one, and we'll have to wait and see. This is a true wait and see in regard to whether they can get an extension done with Ramsey. Otherwise, this one has a chance to go sideways fast.
All right, guys, certainly the play of the Seahawks and the 49ers has been a little bit surprising, but when you look at where the Rams, the Cowboys, the Eagles all are behind the Chicago Bears in the standings, hopefully the bye week for the Bears has given you Bears fans a little time to catch your breath and realize this team is still in pretty good shape if they can start to play the way they did last year after their 3-3 start. So we can't predict the future, but we know it's way too early to panic or be overly concerned about the Bears team as well. We're going to be back to visit with you about it again next week here on our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. For right now, we do have to run. Once again, our thanks to our friends at Grazer Heating and Plumbing, all of our other great sponsors, our executive producer, Dan Mott, the guys at Humphreys McGee. Most of all, our thanks to you guys for listening and staying with us each week. We'll talk to you again next week on our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.